And we're back.
The hell with the intro. We're getting right into this. Right. Who was better, business. Pele or Maradona? Who do you guys... Well, you know where we stand. Where do you stand?
Well, I mean, I have to admit that Pele is the only one I've ever heard of. So I'm going to go with Pele because, I mean, he was such a poster
boy for soccer. You've
never
heard of Maradona?
No, I'm sorry.
But then I had never heard of... He scored a goal once with his hand.
Lou Albano. I mean, I became a convert to wrestling from, you know, a show a couple weeks ago with Mike Edison.
That was an interesting show.
That was radio out of control, man.
Come on. My dad has a picture of my sister when she was a baby with Pele holding her.
Okay. So 3-1, guys. Where do you vote, Pele or Maradona?
Got your mic on, boys? Come on.
I guess that means that
they're not
too embarrassed to even say.
I'm going to go with the guest.
The guest, nice.
Yeah, that's very thoughtful of you. Thank you.
If you guys Google any like interesting observations about that throughout the show, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that's right. Let's like, while you're resting.
What do the bloggers say?
Yeah.
Well,
let's introduce ourselves and our guests. This is the main course part Q. It's the second hour of our show, a little bit more of a magazine-y format with some different types of guests. Today we have Bernardo Palombo, right?
Yes.
Sí.
Welcome, Bernardo.
And Bernardo is the director of El Taller Latino in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And you've been running that organization for, is it 30 years?
Since 1979.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. And obviously, you and I got to know each other through our Spanish classes. I take a Spanish class with Bernardo twice a week.
Can you conduct the next 2 minutes of the interview
in Spanish?
In español?
Sí. Solamente en español.
será muy difícil.
Come on.
We all understand.
Pero, you know, yeah, voy
a tratar.
Tratar. Sí, gracias. Sí, el profesor.
El profesor.
Todo el tiempo.
He knows where you're going to make your mistakes.
Yeah, with my verb forms. I cannot freaking get that.
You know, I have a theory on language that I've only ever wanted to be like 60-70% of a language. I never pretended to be 100%. I wanted to be conversational.
You're pretty 100% with English, though, Patrick.
What?
No, are you sure about that?
Well, you know, it's funny because I learned how to speak French when I was 14. And I realized in studying Spanish with Bernardo that because I learned how to speak French basically by living in France and speaking the language, my grasp of the grammar, in spite of having gone to school there and having to take grammar, is, you know, confined to like three tenses or four maybe, but three that I'm really solid with. And then the vocabulary that I acquired through living there and also working at Broadway Butcher for 5 years, where I spoke French every day with the personnel. And so that was what really built my fluency. But I, you know, my sense of the grammar of French is really pretty sketchy. And with Bernardo, the whole focus of his training is just get the verb form and the rest of it will follow. Isn't that right, señor?
Así es, señora.
So how did you become how did your life take you to become a professor? Where did you...
I'm not a professor. I'm a musician, really.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what instrument do you play?
I play guitar, but I basically write songs. Mm-hmm. Other people play it better than me.
Mm-hmm. What type of songs?
Any. I have from Big Bird to Philip Glass.
Big Bird?
I used to work for Sesame Street for
wow.
many years.
Oh. I grew up on Sesame Street.
Well, maybe you hear some of my song or you saw
can
Big
you
Bird
play,
singing them.
Can you play one?
Hold on, wait a second. Maybe we can get them to play. Is it on the internet, any of these songs, the one from Sesame Street?
Well, I have one that was recorded recently, re-recorded by a Brooklyn favorite, Dan Saints.
Dan Zanes?
Do you know Dan Zanes?
If you don't have kids, probably you don't know him.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
No. But he's incredibly popular with the kiddie circuit. He's an incredible musician, and he writes these wonderful songs, which I guess some of them Bernardo, it turns out, wrote. But he used to give concerts all the time at Symphony Space, and I would take my daughter there
actually,
when she was little.
Today he's
doing a big concert in
Symphony Space today.
No kidding, yeah.
Yeah, so. Actually with Sonia Manzano. the legendary Maria from Sesame Street.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
she's been around forever.
Forever, yes. Yeah,
she was with Maria. There was Gordon.
You got it.
What was the name of the guy who used to have the vegetable and fruit stand?
Mario was in a different one. Yeah. Well, that was long time ago. My kids were five.
That's when I was four and five, too. 1972 I was born.
Well, my kids were born in 1970.
Okay.
And they are in some of the videos of Sesame Street.
Really? No way. And now you have a new kid.
Yeah, I have a new kid.
Was his name George?
Who's it? What? New
no,
kid?
No, no, no.
No, his new kid is Nicky.
There were these core characters on the Sesame Street set that went unchanged for a decade or two. You know, so they were real institutions, like extended members of the family, because they were teaching the alphabet.
And, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, Maria is still, Sonia Manzano is still performing and playing there. Hmm. But anyway, Dan took one song that I wrote many years ago about the water, Cuida el Agua, Care for the Water. Hmm. And it's a song that has been used a lot in a campaign for water in Mexico and in Central America. And last year he was my student and decided to do a crossover into Spanish and recorded the whole album called Nueva York. And one of the songs he recorded is called Cuida el Agua. That was one of my first hits for Sesame Street like 30 years ago.
Amazing. That's great.
I love
you still get residuals on
that? I love Grover.
I love Grover.
Grover, he was always the most introspective, self-reflective. Yeah. Grover, who was your favorite character? Snuffleupagus, remember? No one ever saw him.
Cookie Monster. Near? Far!
Wow.
That was a good imitation.
See, I'm too old for Sesame Street, and my daughter watched it.
She was too young.
Well, you know, yeah, but then, you know, then SpongeBob came along, and, you know, bye-bye to Sesame Street, so...
I don't remember it like him.
They always had two letters and a number. Two letters and a number at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the show, throughout the hour, they would allude to that letter. So the Count Dracula would do something with that letter, and then Big Bird later, you know, it was very, very subversive.
It was extremely cleverly written. I mean, really, you know, learning without knowing that you're learning. It was, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, actually. I mean, I was debating with somebody recently about whether or not learning should be fun or whether learning is, you know, it's a job. And it's it can't always be fun. Sometimes it's really going to be a drag.
Well, for a kid, it's always a drag.
For an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, I find learning Spanish actually a drag in a certain way because it's not coming like that. Like when I was younger, I'm noticing the difference in the rapidity with which I acquire language now versus even 10 years ago when I studied Yiddish for 2 semesters. And my Yiddish came up really fast. It was not hard for me. It was like really simple and there were enough verb forms that were similar to me. And, you know, it was like, okay, I can do this. But I'm finding the Spanish, which I took for several years in high school even, and which I thought would be a snap. Given the pidgin Spanish that I speak in my neighborhood already, no, it's really not. It's really not. It's a beautiful...
Hold on, is there a sound effect for that?
For something being really hard? But the reason I asked Bernardo to come today was because he, among the many other projects that he is involved in with El Taller Latino is... you have been instrumental in landmarking the building in which the... Or, you know, the organization is based, which is on 103rd?
No, 104.
104 and Broadway. Mm-hmm. And it's in a beautiful 3-story building with this incredible glazed terracotta tile work on the outside. I've always really loved the building. And when you look upstairs, you know, above the sort of hideous Rite Aid facade that they have put on the front of the ground floor. But upstairs, there's this incredible, huge arched window. And then above that, which is where El Taller are these enormous metal casement windows that tilt open. And around them is this extraordinary tile work. So you landmark the building, Bernardo, and then... now you're looking, you've created a project to help make the building self-sustainable. So let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah, the building was landmarked by me or basically the community board and some other people tried to save the building because it's the last Art Deco building in the whole area. And it has a terracotta work by the famous French artist that is the only one that exists in Manhattan. And also it used to be the last Whore and Hard Art, the automat.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's one of
the... Automat?
No kidding, yeah. The automat.
It used to be an... I love the automat.
Yeah, I know, remember when there was one at Grand Central? Yeah. There was one across the street from Grand Central Station when I moved into New York in 1977.
I don't know what that is.
I always imagined an automat further west.
Yeah, how cool.
I'm from Florida. No, I don't... What's...
The Automat was a restaurant that was built on the idea that every little piece of food was in a little glass window.
And there'd be and the would walls put would your, be filled with glass windows.
And you'd put like two quarters in and there'd be a sandwich on white bread and it would tell you what kind of sandwich. It was a turkey or a ham or a something sandwich.
They built one on St. Mark Street.
That's like a little...
That's a revival.
Yeah, a revival.
Okay. They were much bigger than the one in Saint Mark.
They were huge. The one across from Grand Central was enormous.
It was
set up kind of cafeteria style.
Was there another one on the west
many.
Side?
There were tons
of them.
Yeah, right.
There was one in Lexington and 42nd, too.
That's the one I remember.
Yeah, but there was another one in front of Grand Central, in the main entrance. Small one. There were all over
I only
the
remember
city.
The one on 42nd and Lex.
You know, it was almost like they were with the industrialization of the food supply, those sandwiches must have gotten really bad and people stopped going. But, you know, back in the day, it was a really solid, nourishing sandwich, you know, in 1920.
It saved the life of many illegal immigrants.
Was
myself.
It good?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were 50 cents for a Bologna sandwich.
Yeah.
No,
it was on white bread. It was on like Wonder Bread. Mm-hmm. And it was like a couple of slices of meat and a piece of iceberg lettuce and mayonnaise or
and
mustard.
Fresh because
and it was fresh because
charcoal.
It was always being
they keep
made.
On
yeah.
Making them during the whole day and coffee and everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I used to sleep there when I just came here.
Where did you come from? Tell us about that story.
I came from Argentina, but I came like many other people just as a tourist. So after a while, my visa expired, and I became an illegal immigrant. And so basically...
How long ago was that?
1969, many years ago.
And now...
Now I am legal. I'm a legal alien. Have a green card to prove it.
Emigre, stay away. He's okay.
I'm okay, yeah.
So what year did you become, or did you get the green card?
After I got married.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say...
You weren't an illegal immigrant for that long?
No, you
married an American woman the first time around, too?
No, not an Argentinian woman.
Oh, but she was, already a citizen.
Because you can't go back to your... home country,
I know, that's what I'm thinking. Exactly. You can't go home until you get your green card.
Well, at that time, when you get the green card, you were supposed to leave the country and come back, and they will give it to you in the whatever custom service. I went to Montreal, Canada. Yeah. When I came back, they gave it to me.
When I lived in Italy, I used to go to Switzerland and I would like to ask to get stamped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I would like... create smoke so they'd try to stop me just to like encourage them to give me that stamp because then I didn't have to come back.
Yeah, because then it proved that you... Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because they didn't document Switzerland because it was its own independent state. So if you came or left from there, they couldn't prove... I was like, oh, I went through Switzerland. I flew out of Zurich and they'd be like, okay, you know, you haven't really broken your visa then.
Right. I remember, now you have to insist if you travel within Europe, Western Europe, you have to insist that the passport control stamps your passport because they otherwise don't want to. And I still have that old-fashioned kids thing of wanting to have the stamps of every country because when I was little, my parents would take us to, we lived in Europe for several years and, you know, we traveled around
they
quite a bit.
They don't do that anymore.
Mm-mm.
The greatest passport I've ever seen was Carlo Petrini's best friend, Azio, who had been everywhere. I mean, he had... everywhere in the world. I mean, it is. It's like a story of a life, you know?
Exactly.
You get to see your pictures. Do you take good passport pictures?
My most recent one isn't bad, actually. Normally, I look awful in photographs, but for whatever reason, I'm not so bad in this one. Believe me, I wore a lot of makeup and everything, because now you have passport for 10 years.
Yeah.
So I thought,
That stays with you.
You got to step up there. It's like the license photo, you know. Last time I had my license renewed, the license lady was like, okay, that was a terrible picture. We had to do this.
again. Oh man, I wish they had said that to me.
It's so funny.
Oh yeah, they're here in New York. They're like, get in,
out. In. No, this one was. I know, and there was a huge line. She was very nice.
So tell us. So the building got landmarked, and then what happens in the building now?
Well, the building was sold as soon as it was landmarked. Mm-hmm. Basically bought by a new company, and we have been having problems because of the economical situation. Mm-hmm. So we did a very successful quest for help from our friends. We got like 700 letters, but interestingly, most of them sent to our landlord that for a while was unknown exactly, was just a company, and requesting to negotiate with us. We are a non-for-profit, we are a 501c3, and in the building, for some strange reason, the floor we occupied is zoned only for a non-for-profit. Hmm. That is, and they weren't able to change. Other landlords tried to change that status. They never changed it. And right now with a building B landmark, that is going to remain. It remained in the same condition.
I should use that with my landlord. I'm a nonprofit. I've established myself with the U.S. government as a 501c3.
Yeah, that might be a good idea, Patrick.
So basically, if you get the zoning, but basically what happened is because of the campaign that we have, we were for the first time in our 30 years kind of contacting politicians and different people working in the city. Mm. And we were able to talk to Strindberg and to Mayor Bloomberg. Mm. And we presented to him a proposal to use the building that is a 3-floor building, mm-hmm, as an example of how greening could be in New York. Hmm. So to put it like the building as a pilot project of the greening, sure, situation, our main fortune are our students in general, because we have lawyers and scientists, mm-hmm, people and professors from Columbia University. Mm-hmm. And with the help of many of them, we were able to create a project that will create a green roof, in a roof that right now is bringing a lot of problem because it's leaking all the time and, mm-hmm, creating a lot of damage in the whole building.
Infrastructure.
We were in touch with the Buckminster Fuller Institute and with some other places who are working with solar energy. And one of the most beautiful and outstanding things of that building are 10 windows that are incredible.
They're huge.
A huge, yeah, window. And we find out that right now solar energy have so much development that right now with a small batteries of solar energy in each one of those windows, we will be able to create enough energy for the whole building.
Wow.
Because we don't have access for wheelchair people, we created with the help of 2 architects and 1 engineer a pulley system that my little 4.5-year-old Nikki could just, by hand, bring people up through the stairs. So we kind of devised a combination between manual technology and the available technology, green technology that you can have right now.
So is it a museum of sorts where you do one thing of many different things, or are you raising the food? Are you raising the fruits and vegetables or the garden for food or to feed the community?
No, because our main thing, we are a language school,
okay,
and a cultural center. Mm-hmm. But basically the idea was that people in New York could see how their own apartments or their own building could work.
Yeah, anybody, for instance, I'm thinking about my building on 107th Street, mm-hmm, which is a 7-story tall building. We have about maybe 18 or 20 apartments all together in the building, and we all have the big windows. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, this would be something, and we have a big flat roof, and nothing's happening up there. So, in a way, a project like this can translate to a lot of the buildings, uh-huh, on the Upper West Side and in Harlem, where you have those big windows and you have the flat roof and you can start generating some energy that you put back into the grid, right? Because isn't the idea that you put your solar energy back into the building and into the grid, and then you get what you need.
There's like this cultural importance to it, you know, for the whole community. So I was going to, could you unpack the word cultural center? Like your language school, but what...
We are a community center that for many years has been using culture as a way to put together different communities, because we are not...
Some do you have readings confused. Or poetry?
We have everything. Yeah, basically... Our idea is like a little utopic city. Mm-hmm. And some people have basically defined us like the global village in the middle of the Upper West Side. Because we are an open space. And everybody who comes with a creative project, with poetry, with music, with song.
Or dancing.
Do you have bake sales and do people cook?
No, because I mean, basically our main and only business all this year has been our language classes, because we don't teach only at the taller. I teach in Einstein School of Medicine for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. We teach in Montefiore Hospital. We teach at the Legal Aid Society. So we provide a lot of Spanish and cultural
even outside communication. The center.
Well, that's a way that we are able to pay the rent. The rent went from $3,000 to $8,000.
The door-to-door doctor might have... gone by the wayside, but not the door-to-door language salesman.
That's right.
Teacher, you know?
El Taller is taking the place.
Well, we should take maybe a 5-minute break or 2-minute break.
Yeah,
just for a song. I would love it, guys.
And come back so we can play some of Bernardo's music.
Do we have Bernardo's music for between break?
Yeah, we got it queued up.
We do indeed.
Awesome. So what piece are we going to be listening to?
Cuida el agua, care for the water.
Oh, this is the piece from...
From Sesame Street
that was re-recorded
by Dan Zane.
Dan Zane last year.
Oh.
Is Grover in this one?
No.
Hay agua en la tierra, hay agua en el cielo, hay agua en la lluvia que moja el sombrero, hay agua que sube, hay agua que baja, hay agua en el charco del patio de la casa.
Okay, we're back. It's the main course, part Q. We're sponsored by Hearst Ranch today on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and I'm in the studio with
Patrick Martins,
Shauna Pacifico,
and our guest today is Bernardo Palumbo from El Taller Latino
Palumbo
on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. A cultural institution of some 30 years duration, and Bernardo's been really active in producing just kind of the cultural liaisons that bring in many, many people from many communities, both to learn language and also to participate in Latin American culture, music, art, and general sort of attitude, I think.
Sounds like they're doing some great things.
Just to refer back to the song that we just heard, which was called
Cuida el agua.
Cuida el agua, which means
take care of the water.
And so this week I went to a panel discussion at the Milk Building down on West 15th Street, which was promoted by the New Yorker magazine about water. And I was thinking that it was going to be a much more of a political discussion about water, because water is going to be the next big commodity that we are going to fight over, the way we fight over oil in Iraq. We're going to be fighting over water in the next, 15 to 25 years. And it turned out to be something quite different. It was actually a promotion for a charity called Charity Water, which was started by a young guy named Scott Harrison, who was basically a party planner. He was like a party promoter. And he got involved in this. He went over for like a month to take photographs with this group that was doing waterworks. And what they were doing was coming into developing countries and helping them build better water facilities, and also especially build sanitation facilities. But really it was about getting clean water, because clean water is sort of the foundation of any civilization. And without it, you have an immense amount of disease. It's incredibly time-wasting and consuming to have to find water. And, he showed us a lot of countries in Africa where he had taken photographs where, the water situation is really sort of beyond sort of Western comprehension, quite frankly. I suspect in South America, I know they have projects there, that water is a big deal down there. So it was interesting that you were already, many years ago for Sesame Street writing songs about taking care of water. And so, you're looking at me like, where's she going with this?
Hold on. I think there's a sound effect for that intro. Okay.
No, I don't know. Drip, drip, drip. But, water is going to be the next big issue in the global economy, and taking care of our water supplies. Like, how did that, you obviously have this whole ecologically minded philosophy, Bernardo, because you want to green up your building where El Taller Latino is housed, and you're writing songs like this. Like, I mean, obviously you wrote that for Sesame Street. That was a while back, right?
Well, because, daring to disagree a little bit with you chronologically, water maybe here will be a problem in the next 5 years, but in most of the what you call the developing world, or the third world that used to be called, water has been one of the main issues.
Oh yeah.
And
we're just starting to jump on the bandwagon.
Well, actually,
why can't they just take the salt out of sea water?
It's really expensive to build those desalination plants. Really? They actually had a guy on from Dow Chemical, and because Dow is one of the biggest companies that develops reverse osmosis membranes and desalinization plants.
So what did they say?
Well, they said exactly what you would expect a spokesman from Dow Chemical to say, which is that we're lily white and everything we do is great for the community. And meantime, we were interrupted by all of these angry South Asian folk who came on to protest Bhopal, and which actually was Union Carbide. I wasn't really sure why Dow Chemical was coming in for the heat there, but obviously they had something to do with it.
Have you stopped talking about the desalinization process?
I haven't stopped, but there are many.
Wondering if you're going to connect it back.
Well, what I'm going to say is that the desalinization process is only appropriate when you are a coastal area. When you're in the interior of a continent, you don't have access to seawater anyway, because nobody's built the infrastructure to pipe it.
Right.
So you're looking for water that's deep in the ground. You're looking for aquifers.
But how expensive is too expensive? If
you're a developing country where somebody like Robert Mugabe is looting the treasury, how expensive is like $3? Yeah. It's like it's irrelevant how expensive it is, because there's no money. So in South America.
Well, in South America, the problem, I grew up seeing my aunts and my grandmother walking like 2 or 3 miles to the first available water faucet to take, and the people coming
and
back.
And it was even a faucet as opposed to just a mud pit.
It was a faucet. But if you, the New Yorker magazine was the only magazine that many years ago wrote an article called The Battle of Water, and they basically wrote about Bolivia. And one of the main issues, or one of the main reasons, because Bolivia was able to elect Evo Morales, the first Native American elected president of a country, was because the two or the three previous presidents tried to nationalize the water. To privatize the water.
Yeah.
And they sold the rights first to a Swiss company and then to another company.
There was a James Bond movie in which that was the premise. It just came out, the one with Daniel Craig.
Did you compose that?
I just saw it.
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Hold on, let me call you. I want to call you. Let's hear how a great musician's personalized phone rings. Oh, wait, don't say your number over there.
Okay.
No, that would mean
Everybody will start calling you.
You don't want that. That was a good ring.
But at that time, I mean, basically, every person across ideological things took to the streets of La Paz, Cochabamba, Potosí. I mean,
to protest the privatization of water.
Rejecting the privatization of the water. And finally, after two or three of those presidents were overthrown by popular outrage, Evo Morales was voted. And the only, as far as I know, the only magazine here who really was the New Yorker. In a big article called The Battle for Water.
Right.
And at that time, I mean, basically, that article was shown how Bush administration was already finding terrorist presence in Paraguay, because Paraguay has one of the biggest aquiferous napas of the world.
Aquifers, yeah.
Aquifers of the world. So basically, at that point, I mean, with the excuse of the war in drugs, United States placed their army in the most in the places where they could control the water for the next 15 or 20 years, and that's why
this was Bush Pair or Bush Feast
was Bush Junior.
Bush Junior.
And recently Evo Morales expelled the DEA from Bolivia because, I mean, basically some of the activities with the famous war in drugs was really.
Really about securing a water
to
supply.
Securing the water supply of the world.
Yeah, because it's a fact. Right now, we're already having problems. The Agualala Aquifer in the western United States is starting to show signs of strain. And, states like western Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, California, they're all having problems with their water supply. And, you know, it's like, where are they going to get it? You know, there's already in between states, there's already conflict about bringing water in from other states and how much it's going to cost. So if we're having that conflict in the United States, of course, this is rarely reported. And I was going to say another thing, actually, when you were talking.
But we ship so much water. Why wouldn't we just ship bottled water to them? They produce 50 gazillion of those bottles a day. I mean, it's just expensive, but I mean.
Well, in California, they've banned bottled water.
Really? Did they? Yeah. They should.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Exactly.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what if Poland Spring
You're not allowed to buy a bottle of... You can't bring a bottle of plastic bottle of water. You have to have a recyclable bottle that you fill yourself.
Exactly.
Well, hopefully that'll...
Well, because the landfill issue
Guys, does Grover have
incredible.
Anything to say about this? Do we have Grover or Cookie Monster on to shed some light on
but
this
But the other thing I was going to say, Bernardo, is so interesting that you say that the New York Magazine was the only one that covered the battle
New Yorker.
Or excuse me, the New Yorker. Yorker, of course, the New Yorker. This country has like what looks to me like total blinders about South America, our nearest continental neighbor. I don't know anything about South American politics. I fought because I worked at WBAI like you, and I did so during the Iran-Contra affair. I was very keyed in to what was happening in Nicaragua and El Salvador. But I mean, after that, you know, it's like you hear about the Shining Path here, you hear about the Desparacido in Argentina there.
But you hear a lot about England and France.
You hear nothing
China
but
and Japan.
About that. And even about Africa, which, you know, not to take away from the problems of Africans, but, you know, right there, in our own hemisphere, you know, our big trading partners with us.
We
and
seem
yet,
so separate from the Americas.
Totally,
you know,
and yet we have
half,
well, how many, what's the percentage of Latinos in our country? I mean, it's huge.
It's
hundreds of millions.
Minority.
It's the second
largest minority.
Population group in this country.
And you know what I think also is something to consider is that there is a break between the old technologies the manual technologies. And I remember a program many, many years ago at Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting. And was talking about the Incas, mm-hmm. the supposed yeah. primitive cultures. Well, those cultures knew how to deal with water, send their system of irrigation, where irrigation system that right now many organic farms in Oregon are using
now.
Right now. So there is that cut of information, too, is as...
It's available.
It's available because and in Peru, in the northern coast of Peru, the people who were there before the Spaniards came knew how to use water from the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And they knew how to take away the salt with system, I mean, primitive system.
Right.
And also the use of water from the rain.
Yes, the collection of water
from
rain.
The collection from the rain. So there are many of these old techniques that in some way I'm trying to apply to the building. You know,
right.
in the building part of our philosophy was to apply the state of the art in green technology, but also to go back, because in our communities here, you have old people who knows things that we don't know and the politicians don't know. Because unfortunately, the politicians are the less informed about all this situation. Like a Buckminster Fuller used to say, the drama in politics in the world is that politicians don't know nothing.
Yes.
I mean, scientists are not there, doctors are not there, but the people who really, at the end,
agriculturalists
decide,
are not there.
Agriculturalists are not there.
Especially.
It's basically a politician who was born in a big city and don't understand that the whole world is still, in many ways, in an agricultural process.
Mm-hmm.
From the big cities, we send all the information to the world. And from the outside, you think, well, we all live here. No, no.
It is a bubble. We were talking about that with our previous guest, you know, people in New York City. And then
yeah, everybody in New York wants to learn how to be a butcher now. You know, it's
but
like,
it's so funny. And then
really?
We say, but wait, we're not in
to kill cats?
Yeah, right. Well,
we did talk about the apocalypse.
We did talk about eating dog, which was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal yesterday.
I think people in urban areas want to get their hands dirty again.
I think they want to reconnect.
These hands have never seen manual labor, and they're not about to start now, Shana.
And you know something that in English you cannot hear, mm-hmm. but in Spanish even a little kid knows. You know why we are human in Spanish? Somos humanos porque usamos las manos.
Mm-hmm.
So the hands is a sign of
humanity.
So right now with the whole digital revolution, we are dehumanized.
I would agree with that.
It's the finger. It's only the finger that we are using. You know,
he's flicking you off.
No, but for in English you have a lot of things. But in apes in Spanish are called four hands, cuadrumanos. And when kids are fighting and make a fist, I remember my grandmother saying chungo, because that's the way it was called when I was a kid. Chungo, why, por qué somos humanos? And I open my hands and say, oh, abuela, because we use our hands.
Mm-hmm.
But in English, you manipulate, you maneuver, you maintenance, and you don't realize that that's mano. So the human civilization is manual, and so basically in the idea or the philosophy to try to present this project to Bloomberg on the greening of this little three-floor building.
Yeah, it's like a third of a block.
We are using many of the stuff that we have get thanks to the Buckminster Fuller museum.
That's Buckminster Fuller.
Buckminster
Fuller.
Bucky, okay,
yeah,
in Spanish.
Bucky
Fuller. But also taking into consideration systems that are still used in the countryside of Puerto Rico or in Mexico or mm-hmm. in Argentina or in the mountains of Peru, where are dealing with the earth in a different way.
I think the interesting thing about the whole green movement, because I mean, I'm 53 years old, so I can't, you know, when I was in grade school or junior high, we had Earth Day. I remember the first Earth Day.
You're not talking about the Big Bang, right? You're talking about, I know you're old.
She was not around at that
time. Actually, according to Patrick, I was. And you might have come in right after me.
No, but before you. Before you.
Well, your glaciers just missed each other on their way
Can
by.
Can we bring it back for a second? So talking about kids, what are you doing in your center to teach this? Because we're all going to go soon, and then we need to make sure that we're making it better and teaching.
Yeah, our next generation.
What's your center, your community center, doing to help teach kids?
Well, basically, our main thing is teaching language. But we teach language in a way that includes everything, that includes the music,
the artwork,
and the way that every culture relate to each other, because not every culture relate in the same way. So it's to really go into a globalization of the culture, because at this point, the only thing that have been globalized is the business. Is a result that we are seeing.
Now, is the new administration, are you seeing funds more readily available for projects like this?
You know, strangely enough, and probably fortunately enough for us, we never depend on funding. We have been just, the idea was to create with the classes, the language classes, an open space. And we never depend on grants and things like that, that in some way is good. Because most of our fellow organizations that were in existence because of the funding they were receiving, they are closed.
Right.
They are closed because there are no more funding.
Yeah.
So at this point, now our curriculum includes a lot of elements that have to do with that. When we teach Spanish, but we teach also all the information and the history and the culture that can be useful for us in the big cities. And many of that culture come from the countryside. With the same problem, the big city create the image for the whole world, but it's not the real image. I worked in a movie called Koyaanisqatsi and Powakatsi. I mean, some films that were only image and music by Philip Glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I traveled with him in Latin America. And part of the premise of the whole movie is that most of the world still is in an agricultural stage.
It's a rural situation, a rural life. Yeah.
And basically what nobody puts here together is that the whole problem of the global warming, it has to do also with the immigrant problem, because the people who used to be in the land and knew how to deal with them right now are trying to survive in the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an example in my own country. My own country has La Pampa, and everybody has heard about La Pampa. La Pampa is empty and recently has been bought by China.
Yeah, this is what I wanted to bring up with you, Patrick.
To plant soja, soybeans.
And it's
destroying the whole ecosystem.
So La Pampa, which at one time had been a breadbasket of cattle, it was where, I mean, Argentina supplied all of McDonald's beef at one time. Mm-hmm. I know that because we rented our house to a man who was a food scientist for McDonald's. And he said, all of the beef is coming from Argentina. So when I was talking to Bernardo recently about that, he said, no, the Pampa has been sold to the Chinese government. And they are raising soy because soy is becoming aside from the food products that it produces, it's a biofuel.
It's ethanol.
Ethanol.
And South America is heavily, and in Brazil too, is Lula. Heavily invested in biofuel production.
But what you see, I mean, if you cross from Buenos Aires to Mendoza, my hometown, 16 hours in a train, well, they don't have train anymore, another disaster. They
don't have training.
God, that'll kill an infrastructure.
So what, you have to ride in a car or you take a plane?
Because one of our presidents, who has a lot of actions in concrete road building, decided to take all the trains out of Argentina.
Cool.
So everybody can go in a bus right now. So basically, I took in 1987 probably the last ride in a train that used to go from Mendoza to Argentina, Mendoza to Buenos Aires, 16 hours, and I crossed 16 hours of empty place, of the place that is supposed to be one of the most fertile places
like
in the world.
Like what the American plains used to be in the West, with the bison.
So right now, basically, most of the people who used to live there are trying to survive in Buenos Aires or in the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
Argentina is one of the few places in the world where in the capital there is more than 50% of the population. We have 38 million people, and there are 17 million or 19 million who survive in
Buenos Aires.
So that's a complete, I mean, and it's the same in Lima, Peru, and it's the same
Brazil,
in Brazil, exactly. It's the same situation, and so it's so difficult for a young kid living or working or growing up in a place like New York or Buenos Aires to get any idea of why to worry about the water. He goes and open the faucet and have water.
Last it's very year, important.
The Board of Education in the Lower East Side last year, they make an exam, a test for general information about the kids. 45% of the kids answer that the eggs come from cows.
Really?
Eggs come from cows.
Yeah, because and the logic is there because they go and take the milk and the eggs from the same place.
They've created an Uber animal. In 10 years, they'll think it's also the chef that cooks itself.
So, exactly.
So, guys, how is our ragtag research team? Did we get any Maradona or Pele?
Maradona?
No.
Blogsphere, no? Okay.
Grover also declined to come on the show.
You guys are like speaking on behalf of Grover.
No, in behalf of Maradona. Grover is for Maradona.
Oh, you think yes. I will allow Grover probably would. But I will say there were times when Maradona, he would get the ball for maybe twice in the game would he get the ball a little open. All the other time he would have like one or two guys like kicking him in the shins. And then with that 1 second of opening, he could keep the ball, go down the entire field and score. And he would do that in these critical games. And in fact, he had such a legend and myth around him because he was a huge partier too. He once scored a goal in the World Cup.
Against England
with his hands,
and we won the championship.
How did he do it?
And
hands?
They call it now mano de Dios.
But do you know why it's called a mano de Dios? That's what the newspaper don't mention.
What? Why?
Because when the military is killed or disappear, like 30,000 people in Argentina, one of the main general explained that they were the hand of God, and Maradona sarcastically, because he's a very politically aware individual, called that, okay, this was my hand of God.
Oh, very good.
But it was in the moment when in Argentina, I mean, there were the depression.
The desaparecidos.
The desaparecidos, yeah. And the mano de Dios was first used.
And that's what they said. They said it was the hand of God, which was why all these people were disappearing.
Well, the army, either Galtieri or Videla, I don't remember which one of the main generals, explained, well, don't complain because the army is fulfilling the job of God, and well, we are the hand of God.
All military and kings have thought that throughout history. You know, power does that.
Well, the book that I'm reading in next week, let me do a quick promo for next week's show. On the main course, we're going to have...
big guest.
We're going to have assuming he shows. Peter Pringle, the author of The Murder of Nikolai Vavilov. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading the book right now. And Vavilov was sort of the father of seed genetics and seed conservation. And he came of age as a scientist right in the transition between the Tsarist regime and Lenin and Trotsky, and then into Stalin. And eventually his policies did not match Stalin's ideals, and he was imprisoned and tortured and eventually starved to death. But the thing that struck me about as I'm reading this book, and I'm halfway through it, is the extraordinary sort of magical thinking involved in the Stalinist regime. It's like, if you don't conform, no matter how lousy your policies are, if they conform to what we want to hear, then you are the hand of God. And if you don't, then you're history. And it's exactly kind of what was happening in Argentina.
South America at that time.
In general. And still, I suspect there's still a lot of disappearing individuals, although it's certainly better than it
was. Well, to lighten this up a little bit, I will concede that Maradona was a better soccer player with his hands.
Okay.
But with the feet, I'll still give it to Pele. So we're about to have our engineer...
We're going to take like a one-minute break and have our engineers come in. Yeah, a 30-second break.
We have so much. This is the finger on the pulse.
My thanks to Bernardo for coming in.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Please Google El Taller Latino, El Taller, T-A-L-L-E-R, Latino on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Check it out, man.
Grover's cool, even though producer doesn't like him.
El alba mañanera que anuncia un nuevo día transmite a las praderas mensajes de alegría. Ah, y antes de nuevo día quisiera yo cantar. Mezcle sus melodías con cielo, tierra y mar. Pasa cantando el río, se mece al abedul. Todo canta, Dios mío, tu amor y poderío.
We have a Jack and Nat, our producer and our engineer.
I am a Jack.
Yeah, his name is Jack Inslee.
This is Rec Tech, right?
Nat Wiener is sitting down. Nat's been our engineer today.
So this is State of the Union 2.
We need a theme song for this.
Well, where's the...
You're listening to the Heritage...
That's not it.
No.
That's supposed to be Olympic theme song.
Really, man?
Is it really?
Yes.
We're going to have to put a limit on the sound effects,
State
Patrick.
Of the
I'm
Union.
I'm going to have to, like, put my foot down
begin
here.
As you wish.
You need a cattle prod.
Okay. Let's remind all the listeners, I'm Jack Inslee. I'm, I guess, head producer here. This is Nat Wiener, head engineer.
Yes. That's absolutely. Right.
And we have a hand in pretty much every show here. And,
yes, you do.
We've gotten a nice big
manos.
Group of,
we have manos in every show.
Yeah. Sí, los manos en todos los shows.
So
tenemos
tell us
nuevos
about,
sponsors.
But sí. Tell us about the shows first. I mean, the shows are
well,
life's juice.
What's new? What's happening?
My favorite new show is called Catch It, Cook It, Eat It.
Ben, yeah, I
Ben
gotta
Sargent.
Listen to
that. He calls himself the Brooklyn Chowder Surfer. I believe he's opened 2 chowder restaurants in New York, and he's sort of fishing all over the East River.
Are there different types of clam chowders, Jack?
I'm gonna guess.
Different types
yes.
of clam chowders? You are asking?
No, but I mean, how many varieties are there?
At least 4.
I thought you were gonna say like 100.
No. There's Manhattan. There's Rhode Island Clear. There's New England with milk. And I think there's one more, which I can't remember. The Manhattan clam chowder is made with a tomato base. The clear is just made with clam broth. And the New England, which I'm most familiar with because I grew up on that.
With the milk in it?
It's basically salt pork, clam broth, and milk. And then you throw the clams in.
Okay.
And maybe with a little bit of onion and potato.
So what's so exciting about that show?
He's a maniac, man. I mean, they bring these crazy fishermen from the East River who more times than not finish a bottle of whiskey on air.
So ouch.
That's fun, yeah.
That's good.
But, last week he had this guy from Acme in Greenpoint.
They're like a fish distributor, right?
They are fish curers. They cure fish. So.
Oh, my God. So we should put them in a
seafood
Do
you buy
series.
From them, Shauna?
No, I've never heard of them.
Yeah, cured salmon. I think they had lox and a bunch of other crazy stuff.
They salt cure or they smoke?
Both.
What okay. other shows are exciting, Nat? What's one of the shows that you like?
I love Hot Grease because
really?
She's definitely one of our most our hardest working hosts, and she's
harder working than me.
No, I didn't say that.
Nat,
I'm not naming names, but she's thrilled, but she's thrilled to have a radio show, which is the number one quality of any radio host, I think. is the amount that they are excited to be on the
I'm
radio.
I'm happy right now. Jeez.
I'm incredibly excited about my show. What are you talking about?
All right, back to Jack.
I want to go with Hot Grease here. No, we're going. So what makes Hot Grease great, actually? Let's hear what... Because it is great.
It is a great show.
What do you like about it?
I like the Hot Five.
Limitless enthusiasm. And
she
is
the Hot Five also. Yeah, she's a
Nicole's really, she's like an NPR enthusiast. She's been a real fangirl of NPR and radio of this sort for years. And she's from Georgia. She had a gourmet chocolate company that was mail order, and then she came up here sort of on a whim, contacted us out of nowhere, and it's just sort of fell into place. She's got this real good sort of an everyman spirit, I'll call it.
She's living the dream.
Yeah, she is. She does. I mean, groovy. Every time she comes in, gotta she's legitimately that. Telling me that this is my dream and you're making it possible and all this stuff. So that kind of enthusiasm.
Oh, you mean
especially...
if I sucked up to you like that, Jack?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Well, no, I mean, enthusiasm is good. I mean, for sure. Now, wait, what about Why We Cook? That is a...
Oh, Erica Wides.
Well, that's been probably the best show on our
awesome.
Network
long,
since the beginning.
Time, yeah.
Have you guys tried any of her recipes?
I don't know what a what is that?
The boys
that
don't
like
cook.
I you guys cooked at home.
Do they make
ever?
That at Roberta's?
When you filled out your HRN application, you guys both said that you cooked at home 7 days a week.
We doctored those photos.
They lie.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody lies. Nobody, hardly anybody, cooks at home. That's why I teach cooking.
What else is going on with the station? We have new sponsors.
Can we announce that?
Sure.
I hope so.
Whole Foods.
Whole Foods.
Hey.
Whole Foods.
So yeah,
Whole
wait
Foods.
A second. And Fairway. Now, we are accepting two market sponsors. You know, we're not intending to find more. We don't want to create a glut of market sponsors. But both, Whole Foods does a lot of charitable work. Fairway is a total New York City institution. And hopefully both will, you know, people frequent both, hopefully.
Oh, who could not love either one of those
markets?
Have them. I mean, you know, you may protest against the sort of what you think you perceive as the whole paycheck aspect of Whole Foods, but actually, Whole Foods has incredible deals every week. I will tell you that from personal experience. Because I have to shop for my cooking class every week, I often go to Whole Foods and check out what their specials are because I can find deals there that I can't find anywhere else.
What's
and
also...
Even though
What's really exciting is we're going to get a kiddie pool and fill it with organic grain and have the owner of Whole Foods and the owner of Fairway come and wrestle in it.
Oh, very nice.
I can't wait for that.
Steve, his shirt
Jenkins?
Off again.
Oh, yeah.
So let
I
me
like
ask,
that furry tummy.
We also have a Wisconsin Cheese Originals.
Yeah, they were a sponsor last month, and they took most of the Cutting the Curd shows. That was nice. And I believe we have some more things in the works. Nicole Taylor, actually, she's working on some stuff.
On some sponsorships. We also have Franny's. They became sponsors.
BK Larder, yeah.
A16, a restaurant.
A16 will be the next sponsor. I think that's going to be in a few weeks.
And Back 40 has done the 10-year platinum program.
Wow.
Yeah.
You way
get
to
a
go.
Is that the program where we get Shauna to host as the deal?
Yeah, we get Shauna to host.
Deal.
And you get a mug.
The HRN staff gets 30 free meals a week.
A week. So wow. the next Halloween party we throw will be at Back 40 then.
So you guys were DJing till late last night. What was that party for?
Oh, man. So we've been doing a monthly dance party called Full Service. Unfortunately, they shut our website down, but you can search Full Service
Jack
Ensley.
Who shut your website down?
Google.
Get out of here.
I got some backhanded virus, and then they shut it down. They won't let me buy it again. But anyway, we've been doing this monthly dance party now since... That's a year and a half about, right?
Wow, you guys.
We've mostly
time.
Been doing it at this place called Love, which is on 8th and McDougal, real underground.
It's literally underground.
Underground, yeah, cavernous, bass-filled. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's
absolutely
like
insane.
Cave, tunnel-y, yeah.
Yes, all kinds of wackiness.
Is it like the underground
Spielokin.
Lounge on 107th Street?
Probably not. I'm going to guess not. This place is,
maybe
I don't think there's anything else.
You need to check that out,
like,
actually.
The underground lounge, is it?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, they have a back room. It's really cool. And they like bringing in people like you.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, Love was great. They have the best sound system, arguably, in the New York area, not just New York City.
What were you guys spinning last night?
Yes.
Were you guys like, what were
you
spinning?
Yes.
Rectech was the headliner, actually.
Oh, yeah?
He had a 300-person crowd, believe it or not.
I believe it.
Yeah. It was a wild time. I don't know. What did you play, Nat?
I played a little bit of a Baltimore Club, which I know you're a big fan of.
You didn't play...
I listen to it when I can.
That's right. And some Wagner. So,
All right. Okay, if you can't play Yes, then you can play Bob.
Yes, is that what you are?
Well, I thought they said they had played Yes. I was like, I the was band, having a yes. moment, you know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It really goes over well on the dance floor these days.
Yes actually thinks they are the most named band Todd of all Rundgren. Time. Just because people say Yes all
I
the
could
time.
Actually sing some Yes right now. But
I just did.
So, well, this has been very interesting. Do you guys have your own
hasn't
personal
been that interesting.
Website?
Yes.
No, what's really interesting listen, is the sponsors that you guys have lined up. That's
well,
been
well,
fantastic.
Before let's give us a sponsor shout-out here. This show is brought to you by KnifeShowMusic.com.
That's right.
And or FancyRestaurantRecords.com.
Okay.
And Roberta's. One and must Roberta's. Not forget these gentlemen who just organized a dirt bike or
oh
a bike
my God.
Racetrack.
There is nothing better than the staff at Roberta's. They're really,
that's
I mean,
true.
Every week there's something new and fabulous about this place, whether it's the fire pit in the middle of the garden in the back or the dirt track they built last weekend for a party. I mean, it's just every single week I come out here and
they're
blown
living,
away.
They're living the dream.
They are.
They come up with these
there's
half-baked
boundless
ideas
energy,
and then they actually do it.
And
it's
they do
crazy.
It. Yeah. I love the fact that they execute. Mm-hmm. Anybody
and,
can have an idea. Hardly anybody
and
executes.
Any idea they share, you know, everybody I tell, they say, yeah, right. These guys aren't going to build a motorcycle track.
No, they did
every
it.
Every time.
They freaking,
it.
Yeah, go out in the back.
Plus,
shut
having motorcycles racing next door to the radio station makes my job a lot more interesting.
Oh, yeah, man.
Absolutely. Nat actually broke a leg on his way to work.
Yeah.
Well,
so yeah, it's a miracle that this Sunday went so smoothly with the amount of sleep that me and the
it's not over yet. Oh, it's
you
not
guys
over.
Did a great
there's
job.
There's still time to really
we're
mess
take
this
a power
up.
Nap and then wake up to Josh Wozerski. So that'll be nice.
Okay,
Josh
well, Mr. Cutlets is going to whip your
show.
Ass.
He is
yeah.
a good
that's
show.
A good show.
Josh Wozerski runs used to run Grub Street for New York Magazine and now has the Feedback.
Yes.
And he's I know Josh because I publicized his first book, Meet Me in Manhattan, all about the best places to buy meat.
So you didn't work on the history of the hamburger?
No.
One? Okay.
That was long past my year with Josh.
Although, Katie might eat one for lunch.
I might, but well, really, I'm in a pizza mood, man.
We were brought in, we were sponsored by...
by the Hearst Ranch today.
Hearst Ranch.
Yep, and thank you to our guest, Bernardo Palumbo. Thank you,
I'm going to go get that.
Shauna Pacifico for sitting in with us
today. Yeah, thanks for having me.
From Back 40 Restaurant. And Patrick, it's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Katie, you
next
are inspiring.
Next week, we
you
have Peter
so
Pringle.
I'm Peter
so
Pringle
excited.
Next week. Yeah,
yes,
big show.
And we have the Bushwick Arts Festival, right?
Is that on the second half next week? Yes.
I'm hoping. Well, I'm hoping. I mean, if Chloe so doesn't do her bit, then I have to find another guest. But right now we're thinking that it's going to be the Bushwick Arts Festival, and hopefully we're going to have people in who talk about all the cool stuff that's going to be going on all next weekend, certainly all Sunday afternoon.
Food.
And we'll do it. No, they're not going to talk about food. They're going to talk about performance,
talk about art.
Aren't
we talk
and
about
artists.
Food.
And by the way, in December, we're going to have Peter Trippi, who runs Fine Art Connoisseur magazine, ooh, which is going to be really fun. That's going to be a main course cue.
And he's going to talk about...
We talk about food.
No? I love it. The cue is really... Park cue is really...
Patrick, we have a live caller. It's Greg and Darren's lawyer. They want to know why you're using it.
Anyway, Nat, are you shutting us down now? Yeah.
He actually shut us down 5 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah. Right. Even though my mic is still live.
Don't have to go
we'll
home,
but
you can't
week.
Stay here.
I will. You're traveling.
I'm going to go see Texas.
Bitch.
The UTEP with Ann. We're going to go.
Oh, she's
traveling with your woman.